Hi everyone, welcome to another of our virtual broadcasts for the ILS NYC 2021 event. Please visit the event website to see the details of our sponsors who help us to put on this event and to view all of the video content which will be available archived there. So we continue to look at the development of insurance-linked securities, always with one eye on the future, and this year we're focusing on defining the next generation of the sector. For this particular broadcast, I'm pleased to be joined by Rowan Douglas, Head of the Climate and Resilience Hub at Willis Towers Watson. Thanks for joining me, Rowan. It's great to see you.
Steve, it's great to be with you.
So for our viewers, I'm just going to give a brief bit of background. Some of you know, others probably don't, but Rowan and I go back a particularly long way, and I actually built Artemis under Rowan's careful watch when I worked for him back in the mid-90s. So we've both been tracking the development of the ILS market since roughly
1990. And we've never been any older, do we, Steve?
Absolutely. Not a change.
Absolutely not. Do you know what I should have done? I've still got some of the original designs we cooked up. I should have put them, brought them with me, but we'll put them up on the Artemis archive for people to laugh at. But you know what? They weren't so bad, you know, were they?
No, absolutely not. We're very forward-thinking. So for today's interview with Rowan, I wanted to... to clarify, Rowan spoke at our very first New York conference back in 2017 and sort of gave us an update on how his world is beginning to collide with the capital markets and how insurance-linked securities could assist in that going forward. So I thought it'd be great this year, while we're all stuck at home, we'll hear from Rowan on how his world is developing and really what the ILS market can do to support that. So perhaps, Rowan, to begin, you could just give us a little bit of background around your work, the area you operate in, and why it's so important.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So, yeah, as you mentioned, I look after the Climate Resilience Hub at Willis Towers Watson, which now has about 100 folks in it, actually, with basically an HQ in London, but teams all over the world. It's been bolstered recently by... two acquisitions towards the end of last year. So Willis has been doing more than preparing to combine with Aon. We've actually made two acquisitions, but both in the climate space, which perhaps in itself tells a story, Acclimatise, which might be well known to some of the viewers, a specialist climate risk analytics company from the climate modelling and adaptation sort of heritage, 15 years old, run by Richenda Connell and John Firth. And also a team, a specialist team from CPI, led by David Nelson and Tom Heller, who are specialists in climate transition risk analytics. That's understanding the risks that companies as well as countries will face from the transition to a low carbon economy. So it's a team of about 100 and linked pretty much across Willis Towers Watson's capital, risk and people segments. To help support, advise companies about, particularly financial sector institutions, about how they need to respond to the new regulatory and investor environment around climate, and particularly around analysing, understanding that risk. And then from that point, obviously, people need to manage it through transactions or even more fundamental sort of corporate structuring. And I'm sure we'll come on to some of these themes later on in the show. But the essence of the team that I look after is that, you know, and as you hinted at, we've been on a long journey of seeing how, broadly speaking, Steve, the reinsurance sector and insurance sector more broadly, and I include the wider world that obviously Artemis serves, has gone from relative ruin in the early 90s when we began working together to relative resilience today, and sat in about by the 2010, 2012, despite the big disasters we all remember in that era, the market was incredibly resilient and had been resilient through three things. Smart capital coming into the industry, particularly from the mid-90s onwards, demanding to be smart to risk, that old claims files were no longer sufficient to understand current risk, let alone future risk. So that smart capital combined with an analytical revolution, which was obviously sort of symbolized by catastrophe risk modeling, which was intellectually the combination of engineering metrics, actuarial science, and geography. So the smart capital said, you've got to use these models. And also, obviously, a regulatory revolution that said, well, what should be the stress or tolerance level of an insurance contract? And no one had even a metric. So they borrowed the engineering metrics from CAT modeling, decided that insurance contracts and the companies that underwrite them should be resilient, broadly speaking, 1 in 200 year resilience. And you and I and others who could step back a little bit from the coal face could see how slowly but surely the market became capitalized to what could happen, not what had happened. And ultimately, you know, had 2005-06 years, the market creaked, but incredibly resilient after Rita, Katrina, and Wilma, as an example. And what also became apparent, obviously, you have been the architect of following this, our market became very attractive because it's the only financial market that obeys the laws of physics. So, you know, lots of capital began to become quite interested in it. So by 2012, when I was on the board of Willis Re, looking after analytics as well as the regulatory side, our view was that risk, in a sense, was no longer the biggest challenge. Of course it was a challenge, and we were investing lots with the research network and other things to get a better understanding of patterns of risk. But actually the real challenge was demand, Steve. Demand for reinsurance, demand for ILS, and through the work we did with the research network, I got involved quite heavily with the sort of political processes which ended up in Paris, or with the World Bank and public-private disaster risk financing. And I can see that, frankly, the challenge was driving demand, and that we needed to get the wider world to have to understand and disclose risk around climate-related risks in a similar way to the insurance sector had. So we did some preparatory work, working, frankly, with the folks who ultimately led to CCFD, with Mark Carney's team at the bank, Matt Scott, who joined us actually last year, to say we need stress testing for the wider economy in climate risks. And once this risk is identified, it can't be ignored. So ultimately, we set up this team, which had an interesting name beforehand. We changed the name last year. It used to be called the Capital Science and Policy Practice. But it was basically to try and drive the sort of regulatory revolution that we had in the insurance sector in the wider domain. And frankly, once climate risk became an input to broader credit risk, we knew that that would be the magic sort of spark that would do two things, actually. Until this risk is properly understood and managed, we will keep building more and more risk in society, and the result will be, in the decades ahead, we will literally lose millions of lives and livelihoods. But actually, if we properly account for this risk, resilience will be valued, and structurally we will save millions of lives and livelihoods and billions of dollars of assets. So that's, if you like, the social, purposeful reason, which I think everyone would sign up to. But of course, the other thing that will happen will be a massive demand for contingent risk capital of all forms to fit inside this, to help capital, investment capital primarily, manage this risk. And my view is for the insurance sector generally, particularly for the parametric related insurance sector, and particularly for the ILS capital bucket to serve that parametric based market, this is very exciting. And we will see a convergence as mainstream investment, mainstream bonds, municipal bonds, corporate bonds, all sorts of mainstream investment instruments suddenly have to take account of a climate risk factor within their pricing that will have to be managed. And that's where I think the exciting opportunity is for the Artemis community. So this decade we're entering, the 2020s, will be called the climate decade. And it'll be the defining decade for climate. And I think it could be the defining decade for the journey that you began in the mid-1990s.
A lot's changed since those days, not least to my hairline. But the story you just laid out there, the sort of transition from learning to really measure and understand risk to then how does that factor into accounting for companies and organizations around the world and governments as well. It seems that we may be reaching a point now where something is going to tip this into much more active use of risk transfer and risk capital. Would you agree? Do you think we're reaching a tipping point?
Yes, we are. It's I think there'll be a set of tipping points because a number of separate but related tips have to happen. But for those who are old enough like us to remember the slightly unplanned way that the reinsurance and insurance sector moved from, broadly speaking, what happened, Hurricane Andrew was the tipping point of crisis that had been building up, not just through Nat Cat, obviously there was asbestos and Piper Alpha and other things, but, the market reached a crisis in 92. It was the year I entered the industry, actually, so I'm quite wondered what I joined. But a number of factors came together, weren't they? There was a sort of a shared analytical understanding of how to measure risk, and that had to develop along with the sort of capital came in. And what will happen in the wider economy won't take 3 decades. It might take more than 3 years, but it won't take 3 decades. So the things which are tipping are, as many of the audience will know, in Paris in 2015, one of the important announcements was the creation of the Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, which was announced then chaired by Michael Bloomberg. It took a while to get going, but reported in 2017, I think it was, 2018. But it was an enormous step forward in basically saying climate risk, and not just physical risk that we tend to be more sort of at home with, but the broader issues around the climate transition, low carbon transition, and some legal liability risk, was firmly on the, was firmly sort of about into the mainstream in the wider corporate space. But it didn't set the finer details of the methods and metrics for how this risk would be properly understood. But nevertheless, those in the insurance world probably had a sense of where it would go, but the wider, but that began the process in a broad but shallowish way. Where the sort of the sharp end of the spear has been in financial regulation in particular, and I suppose the epicenter of that has been actually the Bank of England and its work around requiring risk disclosure, and a lot of detailed technical work going forward right now under a group called the Climate Financial Risks Forum. I think probably another part of that process, just under a year ago, a Dear CEO letter issued by the Bank of England, a PRA, saying that by the end of this year coming, 2021, all banks and insurers in the UK would have to have embedded climate risk, broadly defined, within their planning and within their assessment. And that is including a look ahead 30 years to say, will your business, will your portfolio be viable in a net zero economy, as well as dealing with natural disasters and all the rest. Now, I don't think many people have quite yet internalized what a net zero economy is, but it is an entirely different world where every valuation that you make on any entity right now is wrong. I mean, massively wrong. And it's not just about electric cars and Tesla. 25% of US emissions come from agriculture. At the heart of this is the future of food. It's just, it's massive. So, and that's gathering apace, and it's not just in the UK, it's mediated through a broader sort of process across the world through a group called the NGFS of central banks, which I think you covered in Artemis quite often. You're providing a very important bridge between various worlds. We'll talk about the translation challenge, I'm sure, later on in the show. But so it's really gathering a pace. I'm glad to say that the insurance voice is getting heard more loudly as people who perhaps were slightly sniffy about insurance and even reinsurance amongst our wider financial community are beginning to realize we might have a few things to say about this. And obviously that extends, hopefully, even more quickly to the ILS community, who are an actual bridge between these worlds. But I would say this is going to be a big year. As many will know, there's a big conference in Glasgow. Whether it will be a physical conference or a virtual conference, I don't know, but the big COP26 conference. It's basically every 5 years there's a big climate conference. The last one was Paris. They've delayed it a year, so it's 6 years on from Paris. And I imagine there'll be three big headlines at Glasgow. The first will be an announcement by everybody, public, private sector, governments, of formally the beginning of the end of the fossil fuel economy. I mean, I think that's probably, if I'd said that a year ago, people would have laughed at me. I think now, you know, I think I've just heard that General Motors have announced they're not going to make any more diesel or petrol cars from about 2035 onwards. I mean, I think, you know, I think people are beginning to get the message. So that'll be the first sort of headline. I think the second headline will be the big story will be finance, mainstream private sector finance. COP looked like it was going to be not particularly successful from an intergovernmental perspective a few months ago. That's changing with the Biden administration and the UK perhaps beginning to get a bit more on its feet. But the big story is going to be private sector finance, led by obviously what, you know, it's in Britain, it's in London's got an influence. Mark Carney's driving the bus on climate. There's going to be a lot of stuff around climate. Everybody's jumping on the bandwagon. So there's going to be a big push on climate. The final thing, I think perhaps particularly relevant for, you know, our community in Artemis, is the adaptation and resilience side of climate, which has played a lot of second fiddle to emissions and what's called mitigation, which is the reduction of, you know, but the adaptation resilience theme is going to rise much more. And it may not be quite still an equal in terms of the mind space, but and I think those three things, financial reforms, regulation, and the reason the Bank of England said made a deadline at the end of this year was because of Glasgow. I mean, that's, you know, it's all coordinated. So all this bodes very well for our community and the demand for contingent risk capital of all forms. But I think particularly for ILS and related parametric solutions across beyond normal sort of cat world, although that's going to grow. So yeah, but we've got to work quite hard, I think, as a sector, to have the confidence to perhaps change the way we change some of the words and way we describe our world, which is completely a foreign language to the wider world. And we kind of get frustrated and we say they should study and they should spend a weekend reading Artemis and really sort of get to speed with it. But unfortunately, people aren't like that. You've got to translate your world into their language and make it simple for them, because we've got all the tools. We've got most of the tools. We've certainly got more tools and more understanding than anyone else. But at the moment, no one's hearing us. Yeah. Well, that's a bit of an overstatement, but our voice isn't being adequately heard. And partly, you know, I think that's our collective challenge to change that. But we've got all the opportunity to do so.
Mm. Yeah, it's certainly something I hear from people who reach out to us, particularly on the corporate side, that their understanding of, they understand what they need to get to in terms of risk management and risk financing, but they don't really understand how it applies sometimes to the industry's options that are available. You've obviously been trying to engage the insurance and reinsurance industry heavily through initiatives like you've been involved in the Insurance Development Forum for a number of years. Is it time for the ILS market itself to get much more involved in these initiatives? Would you like to see ILS market representatives involved and greater engagement there?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the IDF, Steve, the Insurance Development Forum. It's just had its fifth birthday, actually, under the watchful gaze of Danny Dubourne, who chairs AXA, but also X-Ray Ion, who's the Secretary General. I'm lucky enough to... I was there at the birth of it, and I'm still there. I chair the OPCO of it. And it's great to see that, you know, 5 years later, it's sort of gone past infant mortality and become quite a respected sort of institution, which is now an implementing agency. I mean, tens of millions of pounds worth donor commitments and other commitments by governments to stimulate insurance-related activities and risk management around the world is now really driving through. So that's great to see. And I'm sure if she isn't there already, Ecoswave should be one of your interviewees on these sorts of podcasts. But I would say that I'm going to slightly break this down into buckets. So in the broader public-private disaster risk financing space, which of course is driven primarily by hydro-met climate-related risks, and obviously primarily around current risks and exposure, albeit in a changing climate, but it's all framed within a climate change sort of agenda. So I don't want to split hairs, but just so that folks realize what we're talking about. I think the overwhelming drive when it comes to those sorts of programs to protect governments or cities, or we're doing work with the humanitarian system at the moment, it's always driven around parametric type programs. So I would say the first thing, before we get into which bucket of capital, parametric related solutions have become almost the only conversation. It's quite funny, you know, with my Willis Towers Watson hat on, and obviously work with Willis Free a lot, we try and help people realize it's, you know, parametric has some incredible advantages. In fact, you know, 5 years ago, everyone would be, you know, you wouldn't get past the basis risk issue. Fortunately, that is an issue now, but it doesn't stop the conversation, which is great. In some ways, things have gone the other side, and people then completely forget more traditional indemnity-based programs, which are sometimes, for particular needs, particularly appropriate. But nevertheless, so parametric has become the almost the only conversation, very fashionable. So there's an opening there for all forms of capital in a way. So that's exciting, because that's the natural, you know, community that the Artemis world, from, you know, weather derivatives at one end to, you know, ILS cat bonds at the other, and everything in between. It's all, you know, that's primarily the means of transaction. That's great. I would say that in that world at the moment, people often start the journey saying, we want a cat bond. Incidentally, cat bond is, I know I've had this conversation before, to the wider world, a cat bond is really the wrong word. You don't buy death insurance, you buy life insurance. You don't buy illness insurance, you buy health insurance. No mayor or government minister can proudly say to his community, don't worry, everything's going to be fine, I bought a catastrophe bond. It doesn't give the right, you know, it doesn't sell well. So, you know, we should call them resilience bonds. And no one actually has defined what a resilience bond is. So let's just say it's a bond to support people's resilience. That will do. And that will be much, I know everyone will, in the existing industry, will sort of curl up and sort of like a curl up in horror at this. But we've got to have the bravery to sort of be positive about what it is we're providing. We're providing resilience. But anyway, that's a separate conversation. So a lot of people will start a conversation saying, you know, government here or region there, we want to issue a cat bond, even if it's called something else. And then they go through the analysis and they realize, no, what they really want is a parametric instrument. It may not necessarily be mediated through a capital markets instrument. That's a separate matter. But ironically, they usually start. And I think that to be realistic at the moment, parametric solutions are the theme. How that's delivered is still an open, but that's still going to open the door to the community in Artemis and ILS world. Frankly, my own view is that the real opener for the ILS market will be when, and it goes back to our earlier conversation, when mainstream investment mechanisms that people have to issue and are used to issuing. So if you go to a US county or city and you say to them, tell you what, don't worry about it, we'll issue you with a cat bond, And you say, well, what's a cap on? They get a bit confused. It's new to them. And you say, well, it's this bucket of money which will sit in a bank account somewhere earning a bit of interest. It's over here. It's not, you're not doing anything with it. It's there. And if a disaster happens, you know, a chunk of change will move to your account, but that's it. They go, all right, it's different. If you say to them, don't worry, you just issue your municipal bonds as you normally do, but, you know, we'll make it so that if the wrong kind of event happens, it'll be sort of paid off or ameliorated, but you don't do anything different. And they're going to be much more comfortable when our skills and capital is wrapped up in that. And I would imagine that if people are issuing capital markets debt, they're going to be naturally more at home with an integrated capital markets climate resilience wrapper. So again, I know this was sort of being a little bit nuanced, but I really feel that's when the big floodgates will open, because you're talking the same worlds are coming together. But we've got to make it easy for our services and our expertise to be consumed. And I think at the moment, sometimes, you know, we're not quite making that easy. And frankly, you know, most of us are doing well enough, you know, as it is. So, you know, what's the big push? But I do think there's a big opportunity. And that's why, you know, we at Willis Towers Watson are pretty sort of focused on this. We can see the way the world's going. We're trying to play our part in sort of cutting through the pathways, because the pathways don't actually exist, but you can see the destination.
That's really interesting, because that thoroughly aligns with things that we regularly write about, where we talk about trying to carve risk out of existing financial structures for asset holders, asset owners. And we are beginning to see initiatives in this area. A mortgage investment fund recently bought parametric earthquake protection through a cat bond, which was that's exactly the type of use case, isn't it?
I missed that. Please send me the story. I need examples to show some of my more skeptical colleagues. So please send me that. Thank you.
Well, you know to stay tuned to Artemis for those.
I must have missed it. Where was I? Couldn't be anywhere. I'm in lockdown. I have nothing else to do.
So I can see we're running sort of up on time that I have with you today. So I guess I'll just ask you, what if you had a vision for where this all ends up in a decade's time, perhaps, the use of different types of capital in helping to enhance the world's resilience and carve out the risk and move it to the capital that can really bear that risk for it. What would your vision be?
Well, actually, I've just written it. So I wrote a white paper for the IDF, actually. 5-year white paper looking ahead, you know, to where we need to get to in terms of the role of insurance broadly defined in the climate decade. So that definitely sets out the broader vision, but then narrowing it perhaps particularly to, you know, the ILS and wider Artemis sort of community. I do really believe that the heart of this is the relationship between climate, credit, and capital. So climate, broadly defined, is going to become just a mainstream input into risk assessment for credit. So every transaction, and if you read, you know, if you read Mark Carney's speeches, you'll see where it's going. But climate, physical transition and liability risks are just going to become a mainstream input to risk, to capital, to credit decisions. So that's going to obviously require credit enhancement, climate credit enhancement. There you go. And in 10 years' time, maybe we won't be talking about a specialist climate market or a specialist resilience funds, because, I mean, we're doing a lot of work in the Coalition for Climate Resilience Investment that basically is aiming to do the work to put physical climate risk into the mainstream cash flow analysis of assets, and it'll just become the norm. So, in a way, all innovators, I read this yesterday, I think it was about, you know, what's his name? Not Elon Musk, Mr. Amazon. help me out, just had a blank.
Bezos.
Yeah, so someone's writing about him and said, you know, an innovator's dream is when your innovation in 5 years' time becomes so, like, normal, people take it for granted. I mean, that's the innovator's dream. Mm. I suppose I would hope that within 10 years' time, and that could be a bit hopeful, but the climate risk is just so normal, we almost don't see it anymore as a factor, as a special thing, because it's as normal as anything else that goes into the equation. And the world that we have is no longer seen as being a bit out there and esoteric. It's just completely part of the mainstream financial system. We might have to change a few names. I mean, the word insurance-linked securities doesn't transfer well, so let's think about something else. But that's, you know, that's just cosmetics. So there you go. Yeah. And then Artemis, I'm sure Artemis now has at least 100,000 regular viewers. I'm sure it will have maybe 100 million by 2030. That's what I hope.
That'll really put the pressure on these sessions then. no, I love that vision though, because that speaks to a kind of integrated climate risk financing, which I think is just vital that we get to that stage. And obviously ILS and insurance and reinsurance as a whole can play a great role there. And your work is very important to that. So look, thank you, Rowan. I really appreciate your time. It's been great to catch up with you today.
Super. Well, likewise, Steve. Thanks for all you're doing to bring these worlds together. And good luck for the, you know, it's 20 years now, pretty much, isn't it? Yeah, 21, 22. So good luck for the next decade.
Yeah, thanks very much, Rowan. Cheers.